If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
It's the dumbest thing on wheels.
Could be. 720 WGN, 835 with John Landecker. And welcoming back to the... Gosh, it's been a long time since I've spoken to you, Tom Appel. How are you?
I am well, John. Thank you.
Tom, the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and I just found that song on, I guess that's what we'll call it, the song about the Cybertruck on TikTok right before I went on the air. And I go, you know what? I got to use that because, you know, they are ugly. Say what you will, but those, I don't understand them at all. They're like, they're everything that that song said, as far as I'm concerned, aesthetically speaking, of course, right? I mean, you don't have to agree, but it's just one person's opinion. That's all.
No, I do agree, and I wonder if the styling is actually working against it. We can forget everything else we know about the Cybertruck, but part of what their draw, I think, to some people was that they looked unique. But once you see one, you see every single one of them, and they just seem like they're everywhere, and they're not unique anymore.
True. I mean, initially it looks like maybe something that could be a Mars rover, but then after, you know, if, like you say, there's a whole parking lot of them, it's like, huh, well, I guess it's... Okay, it's unique, but now it's gone from being unique to sort of like unique and sort of, well, ugly. So anyway, enough of that. The idea of buying a fully American car, I find it hard to believe that anybody still thinks that that's possible, quite frankly.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, and it's not.
No. And it hasn't been for years. Right?
No, especially since NAFTA kicked in the 90s. Yeah. One of the interesting things about the way the North American auto market works is that we work very closely hand-in-hand with Mexico and Canada. And so I'm actually looking right now at the window sticker from a 2025 Ram 1500 pickup. And there's a little section on the window sticker that reads parts content information. And it reads... U.S. and Canadian content, 55%. Major source of foreign parts, Mexico, 39%. And that's just the way North America works. There were no tariffs. Everything just traded hands. And all the American makers had their fingers in Canada and Mexico. And this worked really well. The system was humming along.
Uh-huh. Is the hum about to come out of it? Is that what we're getting at? Because that's the way it sounds to me, you know.
Yeah, it's really confusing now. One of the interesting things, too, is that the vehicles built in America that are most American, almost none of them are American brand. Of the top 10 vehicles that are most American, the Jeep Gladiators on the list. The rest are Toyotas and Volkswagens. And I guess Teslas count as American, but I still think of them as new.
Yeah, this is why I'm so confused about this to begin with, as to how you would implement these tariffs that supposedly are going to be here like in a couple of days or something. How are you going to part? How do you, what's the word I'm looking for? Literally take apart an automobile part by part. Determine what part came from what country, and then put a tariff on what? That part? Or do you then tariff the entire vehicle? I'm confused.
I fully appreciate your confusion because I don't have any clear answers on this. And one of the interesting issues, too, is that the White House currently believes that the tax that Europe charges Americans to export vehicles to Europe is too high, and it is 20%. But Europeans don't want American cars, and we don't export vehicles there anyway. So while this seems unfair, it doesn't really matter, and it could be tweaked at the time when we agree to renegotiate these things. I don't understand the emergency.
And I think most people agree, correct me if I'm wrong, that tariffs on items that will be purchased by the American consumer, if there's a tariff on that item, the price of that tariff will be passed along to the consumer by the manufacturer. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. Here's the interesting thing about the auto industry. We hear about the margin on something like an iPhone, and I've heard numbers between 30 to 80%. That's the gross I'm sorry, the net profit margin on that vehicle or on those products. Mm-hmm. The net margin on an American sold vehicle is like 6 to 8%. There is no 25% room there. Prices have to go up, or they simply don't sell the vehicles because they can't make money on them.
Well, that's never going to work. I mean,
no.
I mean, from the manufacturer of the automobile, that'll never work. I mean, first of all, they have to try to sell them at a higher price because they're. Profit margin is going to be destroyed by having a tariff put on it, then raising the price of the car, and then having the consumer not buy it because the consumer doesn't want to pay anything from, I believe, $4,000 to $12,500 more per car. Are those figures somewhere in the ballpark?
Those are the numbers I keep hearing, John, and we're already at an affordability crisis issue in the auto industry. Since the pandemic, we have not seen auto sales fully recover. And part of the reason is that cars got more expensive and interest rates are very high, too. And consumers really cannot afford the current average payment on a new car is about $750. And that's really at the far edge of what consumers can afford. And if that goes up at all, consumers are going to back away. There'll be a shortage of used cars then because that's where consumers are going to turn.
Right.
And the market's going to look crazy.
Well, you seem to know that. I seem to know that. Why doesn't everybody know that? Or they just don't care. I mean, I'm just sort of baffled that the idea of putting tariffs on things and making them cost more is not going to adversely affect the economy. I just don't. I don't know. The logic of it escapes me.
I completely agree with you, John. And it's interesting, too, to watch manufacturers sort of drag their feet on this because there is no easy solution if these tariffs kick in. Manufacturing cannot be accelerated or increased much in the U.S. because we're at pretty close to plant utilization. And building a new factory costs billions of dollars. And you have this abandoned capital, this lost capital in Mexico and Canada where you were building cars that's going to shut down. And no one's going to want to build a factory that takes 2.5 or 3 years to build in the U.S. where labor costs more money and the administration might change shortly after you've built your factory. So it's looking increasingly like the period of time between now and the administration change is going to be very ugly in the auto industry if these tariffs do kick in.
Yes, indeed. I mean, so far, I mean, to be honest, and these have not been in place yet. There's been a lot of talk. But not any real action taken yet. So until things actually do happen, it's speculation to a certain extent. But I would think that there's also, I don't know, collateral tariff damage, if you will, like, say, the price of auto insurance, for instance. Would that be affected by... inadvertently be affected by the tariff that increases the price of a car?
Well, it would. If the price, in fact, does go up, then the insurance will necessarily go up, too.
Right.
And what could happen, too, which would be almost worse, is a secondary problem with parts for replacement of a damaged car. Many of those are imported. Body panels, body stappings. A lot of that stuff comes from Mexico.
Right. So... good luck, everybody.
Sadly, that is almost the best advice. Additionally, if you were thinking about buying a car, new or used, this might be the time to do it, like right now.
Right this second.
This evening.
Get out there tomorrow morning and cut the deal and drive it off the lot now.
And sort of coincidentally, because people are afraid that the tax incentives, the $7,500 federal tax incentive on electric cars is going to go away, and it may. There is a bill in Congress to do just that. Electric car sales are way up right now as a result. And it's interesting, too, that people are getting in just under the – we don't know when that door is going to close because I haven't heard much about that bill. But it probably will close, and then EVs will become more expensive as a result.
We got Tom Appel, who's the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and we're going to talk some more about cars and EVs and things like that when we come back on 720 WGN. Thank you, Tracy Chapman, 720 WGN, John Landecker at 847, talking to Tom Appel, who, of course, is publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. And the conversation started out with, well, basically that there's no such thing as a fully American car. I mean, some people have said, hey, just go out and buy an American car, and guess what? You'll avoid whatever kind of tariffs there are on foreign cars. There's just one little hiccup there, and then that is that there's no such thing as a 100% American car, because they all have some sort of part or something in them that is not originated within the United States. So that makes it a little more difficult to figure out exactly what's happening. You know, Tom, I was thinking of, you know, the whole American-made car thing. I had a visual of, I don't know how many years ago, because it has to be quite a few, before, well, the big three automakers in Detroit were still the big three automakers in Detroit. And there was some kind of foreign automobile that had made some sort of inroad, and the auto workers were really ticked off. And they had this demonstration where one of these cars, I don't know, maybe a Toyota or something, was sitting there, and they took baseball bats and, you know, beat the crap out of it as a protest against this kind of vehicle being available in the United States. I don't know how many years ago that was, but those days are long gone. I mean, that just doesn't exist anymore.
No, and we're probably talking about Honda in Marysville, Ohio. And Honda was the first major manufacturer. Yeah, I think so. And that was mid-80s. And Honda was the first Japanese manufacturer to set up a significant manufacturing base in the U.S. And at the news, we were very afraid as a country of Japanese making inroads into the U.S. and buying property and building cars here and taking over the U.S. economically. And that never happened. But one of the nice things that did happen is Honda opened up another plant, and then Toyota came in. And now the Korean manufacturers are here. And what we have is yes, if you buy a Hyundai or a Kia or a Honda, those profits will go back to Japan. But in the meantime, they're building most of their cars here. And that's really good news, because they're hiring American workers, paying them American worker wages, even if they're not union. And that's all really good news for the country. And there's just a lot of people who work for these transplant automakers. And it's mostly a very good thing for the U.S.
Well, let's shift gears, he said, no pun intended, to EV, electric vehicles.
Yeah.
As you mentioned before the break, right now the sales of those kind of vehicles are they're doing very, very well. In fact, I wish I could remember exactly what kind of ad I saw today from, like, I'm paraphrasing, I could be wrong, I'll use Ford as an example. Let's say that there was an ad for a Ford EV, and that they were going to include in the sale promotion some sort of methodology. You would get a charging unit. That's it. That you would put on your, that you would use at your home, and it would be included in the price of this EV. Have you seen anything like that, or am I just hallucinating, or both?
No, that's been happening, and several manufacturers will do that. They will either pay for it, or they'll lump it into your payments and you pay for it. But either way, it's a handy way to do that. You still need to pay someone to install it. But the unit itself can be as little as $500. If you want one that works with your phone and can work, you know, your phone app can control the charging unit a little bit, they cost more. But the charging units are $500-$600 to $1,500, depending on the one you buy. And then depending on your home, installation can be $1,500, $2,000. And you have to do that one time. And that charger should last forever after that. There's not going to be a lot of changes to home chargers. In fact, the one we had at the office at Consumer Guide, I think it's about 20 years old now, and it's working just fine.
Wow.
But yeah, rolling those into to the thing as an incentive, it seems to be working pretty well for manufacturers.
It seems to me that not that long ago, when discussions of electric vehicles began to be more frequent, one of the things that was mentioned was that an infrastructure didn't exist across the United States where you would be able to charge these vehicles. I mean, you know, if you had a regular gasoline powered automobile, you just stop at your local gas station. But if you were electrically powered, there was no place for you to, for lack of a better term, plug in. But obviously that has improved.
Yes, it is improving. And fortunately, there was a federal movement, part of the Inflation Reduction Act, was to install as much as $5 billion worth of charges nationwide. Now, the current administration has backed off some of that money. A lot of that money was already placed and not going to be returned, so it will go to infrastructure. But there are a couple pieces of good news here. One, Tesla, which has been very controversial lately, has opened up its charging network, which is excellent and reliable and very well distributed across the country, to other makes. So now if you own a General Motors product or a Nissan electric product, you can charge at a Tesla station. So that's good news. Additionally, manufacturers, including General Motors and BMW, and I think seven other manufacturers, have started a non-for-profit group called Iona, and they're building their own charging network. So that's going up, too. And there's a lot of money going into that, and those are being built right now.
Is the future of the electric vehicle brighter than a gasoline or a hybrid at this point, even with a tariffs allegedly just around the corner?
They will slow down this year. I don't know if they'll decline this year. But one of the interesting things that's happened is that we started talking about electric vehicles. It seems that people are no longer scared of hybrid vehicles. And hybrid vehicles have been selling very, very well. Especially vehicles like the Toyota RAV4 hybrid, the Honda CR-V hybrid, vehicles like that, very popular right now.
Yeah, I got into a discussion on the price of gasoline, with a relative of mine who lives in California. And I don't know, let's say I was looking at the pump and it was $3.20 or $2.89 or $2.95 or something. And my relative says, well, that's better than the $6 or $7 that it is in California. And I said, is that high? That much, you spend that much money on gas? She goes, oh, not me. I don't buy any gas. I've got an electric vehicle. So it's like, oh, okay. I sort of get that. That certainly would cut down on your gasoline expenses if you didn't use any of it. And that's also true of a hybrid, is that in its name, it implies that it's a combination of both, and you won't be using as much gas, and you'll be applying electricity to make your car go forward. Do you have any other predictions about any of the tariffs or the EV or anything automotive, Tom?
I've been trying to sort of wrestle with myself. I'm kind of thinking that the tariffs are so bad for the country and for the auto industry that they're going to be short-lived if they're actually enacted at all. I'm hoping so as well. And I hope my fear that they're going to be terrible isn't sort of clouding my judgment here, but I think they'll be short-lived and we're not going to see the eruption that we could possibly see. Additionally, I think EV sales are eventually going to start a nice and steady growth rate simply because we now have neighbors checking in on their neighbors' EVs and finding out that they're kind of pretty cool, and it's nice to charge at home and never go to a gas station.
Right, it sure is. In fact, the relative I was speaking of that went out and leased an EV because two friends of theirs came over and they were in their EV and they said, "You've got to try this. You've got to get one of these." So it was actually word of mouth advertising on an EV vehicle, and you know, there's nothing quite better than word of mouth. On the bottom line, I mean, really, if somebody that you know and respect or a friend of yours recommends something to you, you're more than likely to go, oh, well, at least I'll seriously consider that. So,
word of mouth is the best advertisement.
It sure is. Well, thanks, Tom. It's great to talk to you again, and we'll see what happens in the next few days, and I'll talk to you down the road, so to speak. Thanks for being with
us. Sounds good, John. John, right. Thanks.
You bet. Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive.